Welcome to Siptaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron Seven.
What happened to the first six?
They died. Yeah, this is Aaron O'Brien, not Aaron Seven. Sorry, guys.
Oh, welcome. Good to see you. It's just the two of us.
Just
lonely.
Two of us, yeah.
I love you, man. I forgot to say it last episode. You said when Kipley and James are on, you're like, David's never even said I love you. I'm like, oh.
Oh, man, I love you, too. What's going on?
We're talking about butt sex. Isn't that the same thing?
I know. What's going on? We've got a couple small stories that came out of Discovery. One about the Klingons that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, basically that the Klingons are a 200 years old ship that came floating out of space. And it's like, hey, we're going to come back into action. So they've been... I don't know, cryogenically frozen, or are they just been a generational ship?
I think it's a generation ship, and the guy who's, I think, the Kuvma, is the guy who, he says he's, like, Kaless reborn.
Mm, yeah, right, yeah.
So, like, I hope, like, the ship is just...
He's like the David Koresh of...
the Klingons.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it's a they're occultish, and all their armor's 200 years old. Like, everything on the ship is just super old.
Sure.
And so supposedly the sarcophagus is, like, adorned the outside of the ship.
Gotcha.
Like, when someone dies, they lift up their sarcophagus and they stick it on the outside of the ship. Like, sounds like the Reavers a little bit from...
Yeah, that's a good point.
at least how... You know, in Firefly, how they did it in Serenity.
Yeah.
Where they just, like, decorated the front of it with the corpses.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. The Reavers are terrifying.
Sounds like Star Trek is getting into Reaver territory.
But that was cool. So, I mean, everyone losing their mind about Discovery and the Klingons, it kind of shows that we're probably seeing a different version of Klingons that are long forgotten.
I hope they just have lots of radiation poisoning, and maybe that's why they have no hair. Because, I mean, if the guy claims to be, you know, the Kaless born again, we got to remember, Kaless did make his batleth out of his hair. He stuck his hair in lava, and out came the Sword of Kaless, according to Klingon lore. So, for the Kaless reborn to be bald is kind of like blasphemy. He needs to have radiation poisoning.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. But it is interesting that we have a different, like, sect or version of Klingons.
Like, religious fanatic
Klingons. Yeah, and they've been separated from a long time from...
The rest of the Empire.
Yeah, so they're not part of that, technically. And we'll see how that plays out, you know, so we don't really know. But it's definitely interesting, and 200 years before is quite a long time.
Which explains the way the ship looks so different. I mean, like, I love the design of the ship. I think it's beautiful. I always thought it should be, like, when we've talked about it before in the past, I always thought it should be, like, far in the future because it's such a big departure for how ships were designed by Klingons. But being 200 years older, I'm like, yeah, I can give that a pass.
Yeah.
That 200 years old, it looks so crazy. But it's also, it seems like it's a ship built for ceremony less than battle.
It's like a flying cathedral.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like to me, actually.
Yeah, it looks like very much like a cathedral. Stained glass windows, all this crazy architecture. It looks beautiful. I love it. I don't know how any Klingon had the patience to put that ship together.
These ones did. Yeah, for sure. What else did we have?
I saw an article. I can't remember what website. I was looking it up before we started recording, and I couldn't find what website that reported it. But it's been reported that the first episode of Star Trek Discovery is called the Vulcan Hello. So I'm like, that's interesting. And there was a panel in Chicago for the Star Trek convention that's happened out there. And there was a news that Jonathan Frakes dropped a big spoiler, is that the Mirror Universe is going to be in Star Trek Discovery. I don't have a problem with this, but the show's supposed to be this big, strong arc. And I'm like, I don't know how, like, the Mirror Universe is going to tie into the rest of the arc unless they do, like, a Deep Space Nine thing where you have, like, a Mirror Universe episode of the season.
You got stuck in it somehow and, like...
Or they just, like, oh, they just beam over. It's like, oh, yeah, we need the Defiant.
Yeah, wasn't it's that just, how it, O'Brien or somebody beamed over?
Smiley, yeah, they just beamed over. It's like, yeah, I'm from the Mirror Universe. We need the specs. We got to build our own. I'm like, really? Like, it's just kind of weird. But, I mean, it'll be cool to see Mirror Universe, but I'm just like, it's a short 15-episode arc, and I just don't feel like there's going to be enough time for it. I mean, hopefully it makes sense and it works out well, but
yeah,
it just seems kind of strange. I wonder if in the Mirror Universe, the Klingons are on the run. I wonder if Hoshi Shato will still be Empress.
That's a good point. Nah, it's still...
They could get what, Grace... Linda Park back, and Grace Park was Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Get her back, put some old age makeup on her, make her Empress of the Terran Empire.
I guess it could.
That'd be fun to call back.
It's a possibility. I don't know.
I don't know either.
How old would she be at that point?
Hundreds. Hmm. Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think that would work.
Maybe Hoshi Shato the Third. Who knows?
Well, that's all very interesting, and we're getting really, really close to Discovery, so that's
so
awesome.
So excited.
This episode, we're going to go a little closer to Discovery time. We are talking about the original series, Assignment Earth, and this is Season 2, Episode 26, and it was first aired March 29th, 1968.
This would have been the series finale.
Yeah.
Of the original series, if it wasn't for that letter writing campaign.
Yes.
And what a weird episode this is.
This is
animated series level of weird.
Yeah, buckle up, people, because this is a weird series. And when you hear the backstories, if you don't know it, it's a little more interesting in some ways, but there's a lot of stuff that just like this is not a typical Star Trek episode whatsoever. It's very different.
It blows me away.
So
not a good way.
So we start off that the Enterprise used light speed breakaway factor.
This episode just starts off bad.
Yeah. So
they're like, time travel is just a regular everyday thing. We're just gonna go back to 1968 and we're just gonna look.
So yeah, so the Enterprise is on like a reconnaissance, just scientific study.
Historical mission? Where's the MacGyver? Oh, wait.
Yeah, we got rid of her. Yeah, a historical study of Earth in the 1968, which was interesting that at the time, what was going on, like there's a lot, obviously there's a lot of turmoil at that point, but they're going back and they're studying it when they get a transmission beam being teleported or a transporter beam coming through the ship, and it's extremely powerful.
It's just shaking. It's like there's like fire going behind the transporter room, like the panels you see in the circular part of the room. There's like fire back there.
Sure. How did fire start like, back there?
I don't know. It's that beam. It's so powerful.
Spock says
Scotty was cooking marshmallows.
That's right.
Spock and weenies.
So Spock says that the beam was coming from thousands of light years away. So pretty far.
That's pretty far. I wonder if it's the Iconians.
I don't know.
Because they said it's something that wouldn't be discovered even in their time.
Right, right.
And Next Gen is when they found like the ruins of the Iconian Empire.
Maybe.
Nothing in the memory alpha supports this. All the memory beta, it links to memory beta stuff, saying it's some other alien race. I'm like, oh.
Right, right.
Okay.
Well, a man comes, beams toward the Enterprise after the strong transporting beam.
No, a cat beams on the Enterprise.
Right, right, yeah.
With a man.
With a man.
Cat's the most important character because she's hot for a second at the end of the episode.
For a split second.
So.
There we have a man. This person is named Gary Seven.
So in the casting room, right, you're going to be a cat. You're going to be a really sexy cat. And you're going to be on screen for 2 seconds. Meow, meow. Do you want the role?
Meow. Meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow.
And then you make a weird wink at the other woman on the that's there.
Meow.
Yeah.
All right. So the strange man says, "Why have you intercepted me?" And Kirk's kind of like, "Who's this guy?" Like, and
this guy.
He says that he's Kirk from the United Spaceship Enterprise, and that
Earthlings don't have space travel,
right? And he was like, so this Gary Sevens first, he's thrown off by the Enterprise crew because they shouldn't be there at this time period, and they're thrown off like, who is this guy coming from who knows where,
yeah,
coming to Earth or beaming to Earth that they intercepted?
He notices Spock and he's like, oh, you're from the future. Got it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So from there they have the security take him away, but then he tries to, you know, little breakaway fight, but they stun him and that's about the end of it.
Kirk stuns him at the last second. He ignores the Vulcan neck pinch.
Neck pinch does nothing to this dude.
The cat claws up the red shirt, he's dead.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so he says that he's comes from a faraway planet, more advanced, and that they would never find it, the planet that he's from. So,
not even in your time will you find this planet,
right? They do a bunch of studies on this guy, and they're trying to find anything out about
him. He's the perfect human, the perfect body.
Yeah. So
Bones is all excited about how he's
Bones is horny.
Yep. Been too long since I've seen a woman.
And then Chekov says that the beam came from no habitable planets in the area of the galaxy, and that they just and Scotty says they can't analyze the transport beam. So this guy's a complete mystery, basically.
It wasn't the Kazon homeworld, that's for sure. Although that's probably not an inhabitable world either.
You got any dilithium? We're trying to make our way to Kazon
territory. I got to know how they moose their hair in that weird rocks formations.
Man, I'm gonna get some awesome waves today, man.
Way cool.
It'll
be totally orange. Maybe that's where Trump is. Maybe Trump is Kazon.
Or what about the
really bad hair?
The TOS, the Apple.
Yeah,
you know, those guys. Weird one too. So they're looking through like what's special about that day, what's happening, and basically
assassination and this and that,
and that there is a launching of a nuclear warhead platform by the United States. Countered by similar launches by other powers. So basically, you know, the arms race that, you know, was going on, especially during the Cold War, and that the sky would be filled with nuclear missiles with any mistake could bring down a nuclear holocaust on everybody. But Gary Seven escapes from the brig where he uses his
sonic screwdriver.
Sonic screwdriver. I'm going to get into that later. He deactivates the force field and puts the guard to sleep. And then back in the briefing room, Kirk, McCoy tells Kirk that Seven is human. And like you said, he's a perfectly human body. But that's when the cat jumps out of Spock's lap, which he's been petting quite a lot. He says he's been quite drawn to it.
I'm quite drawn to it. Yeah, because she's really hot.
She's really hot. Don't fuck your cat.
unless she's in human form.
In human form.
Then it's okay.
Never fuck your cat.
Oh, that last podcast joke.
So the Seven goes to the transport room, hijacks that, and they beam down. From there, he materializes in outside of a vault chamber inside of like an office at that time. So this is kind of weird. We've never seen anything like this before. So he's in like an office of the 1960s and walking out of like a bank vault that's in this office.
Like on the fourth floor.
Yeah. And he looks down, he sees like traffic. He's in New York City. Seven then has a computer behind them. The computer is called Beta 5. And
they have this long drawn out conversation,
like who he
it's
is.
It's just like, and what,
and like it won't give him any clearance, and he's looking for other agents that are there to perform a mission.
Agent 86 of Control.
And
died in a car wreck.
Yeah. So
with his wife, 99.
And I was just thinking how Shadow's wife died in American Gods.
Oh.
If you haven't seen that, watch that.
Oh. Roadhead is never a good idea. Mm. Say no to Roadhead. Doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. Say no.
I don't know. It's not too bad.
Unless you're both in the back seat.
Anyways. So his mission is basically to stop this nuclear launch to go, this rocket to launch out into space.
Looks especially like the Apollo.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah. Anyways, so Spock and Kirk dress up in their 20th century garb. They beam down, and they go looking for Seven. Scotty's kind of like directing them through, trying to find them, and they find the building. Now, at this point, we get a young Terry Garr, very young, and she...
The computer says she's 20, or the green block says she's 20.
Well, I don't know exact age at the time,
but I'm sure she's probably older in real life, but...
Who knows, but she looks really young. So she's coming. She's apparently Gary Seven's secretary.
Well, the secretary of the two former agents.
Right, but technically his.
Roadhead kills.
Roadhead does kill. Well, but what a way to die. when she runs into her name is Roberta. When she runs into Seven, she doesn't know who he is. He gives her kind of showing that he works for the CIA, and she's like, "Oh, okay." And he starts having Wright report everything because he thinks that she's one of the agents. And basically, this computer's not computer, the typewriter's typing everything that she says, and she's freaked out.
It's like he's got a very poor perception of what's supposed to be going on, even though he knows what everything in the room is. He knows the typewriter. It's like he's been there before, but also hasn't.
Right.
It's really weird, like the way it's played. It's like, what's a secretary?
Well, he knew what a secretary. He just didn't know who she was. He thought that she was a...
Wouldn't he have any like documentation on what these people look like? Like
he's just never met him. I don't know.
Bring it up on the computer. Oh, maybe the computer just talked smack to him again.
Yeah, computer was giving him a lot of
clip. That was a long conversation.
It was long drawn out that didn't need to be. So he basically says, "Hey, I work for the CIA," which he does not work for the CIA, but she believes him. Then doesn't, then does. Then go to the McKinley rocket base where he's going to try to disable this this rocket launch. Then Kirk and Spock.
I think they said there's like an hour.
Yeah, there's an hour to launch.
There's an hour until launch, and he's just kind of like just puddling around.
Well, he kind of gets out of there pretty quickly. So he says, "I'm going to my office." He locks the door. And
like, tell people I'm busy.
And then that's when he walks into the safe and disappears, and he comes out down at the McKinley Fort McKinley launch base. Kirk and Spock break in. Roberta, Terry Garr's character, starts freaking out. "Who are you?" And they try to break into the office, but then she calls the police, and the police come.
They beam up with the police officers to the Enterprise, and he's like, "Gary? Yeah. Did I have too many donuts?
Yeah,
with booze in them."
Right, and then they beam them down
immediately.
But it's a good thing they didn't fire any of their weapons. Jesus,
like it would have gone through Scotty's head.
Like it was today's day and age, like these cops would be killing everybody. Like
probably
fill them with lead.
Or hopefully the Enterprise transporter's disabled weapon. I don't know if they know how to disable old-timey weapons, though.
Vulcan Lives Matter.
Vulcan Lives Matter. Oh, Rodney King in space!
Oh! So illogical. Anyway, so they beam down to the McKinley base. As well. So they're going after Gary Seven to find out what's happening. Meantime, Gary Seven runs into a security guard, and he puts that guy to sleep.
With a sonic screwdriver.
With a sonic screwdriver. Heads up to the rocket. They're clearing out the rocket area, the gantry, and all the launch pad.
With the cat.
Oh yeah, he's got the cat the whole time. And by the way, the cat's talking to him the whole time.
And he's like talking back to it. I know this.
I know.
Yeah. I've done this before. Yeah. And he's like way up on the rocket. He's supposed to be like way up near the top, and like he's fiddling in with the instruments, and the cat's crawling all over him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just
like a cat will actually. Yeah. So, anyways,
last time the cat put his head up your butt. Mm. Last week.
It did.
Yeah, he was all up in there.
Was he up there?
Yeah.
Man, my asshole's so loose. Well, anyways, so he modifies the rocket. At the same time, Kirk and Spock, when they're looking for him, they get caught by the same security guard who just woke up from his nap from Gary Seven. And he gets them into custody, and of course Kirk and Spock just kind of stand by in the rocket launch area.
They won't say anything.
Meantime, Scotty's been looking for Gary Seven in the launch area. He's been using like a weather satellite and like looking around. He's like, man, you get a lot of angles on those weather satellites.
He does. They're like
that guy's a whiz with the weather satellite.
He, like, remote controlled it.
Yeah. Mission control for that weather satellite. Like, what is going on with 337 satellite? How can it do these? 338
and 339.
Holy shit!
All these angles.
They're just circling.
I love how it, like, it starts to zoom in and then just like a crossfade. And it's him on the gendry with the cat.
Yeah.
And he's so, like, Captain, should I beam him up?
Yeah, so he beams him up.
At the same time, the secretary is fiddling with the safe.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because he gets beamed up to the Enterprise, and she beams him back accidentally, right.
So back in New York, Terry Garr, Roberta, the character, is in there, and she's fiddling with the safe. She finds the safe. And she starts fiddling with it. And when he gets beamed up by Scotty, instead of going to the Enterprise, it intercepts him. And he goes back to the New York office. And then Gary Seven is then trying to say, hey, I didn't finish everything I needed to on that nuclear warhead rocket. Can I still hack into it? And the computer's like, yeah, you can still do that. So he's
at least the computer didn't give him lip this time.
That's right. So... So the rocket launches, and all of a sudden it's going to launch itself into Southeast Asia or someplace like that. And there's going to be a
nuclear. Kill Khan before it happens.
Yeah. Well, so the rocket's going there, and you know all the Uhura is like everyone's seeing this rocket going shooting, and they're going to take. Action here in a minute.
Yeah, she's listening to all the different radio conversations happening over the world.
And so Scotty at one point was going to try to shoot it down. I don't know if he lost his chance, but that like option went away. It was not really explained. But
no, I think they brought it up and then they just never brought it up ever again.
But he calls Captain Kirk.
Because he was asking if he could shoot it.
Should I shoot it down?
But I don't even think he asked.
No, he doesn't. So Kirk, so at a moment when...
the security guards aren't looking.
Kirk picks up his communicator. And anyways, they beam him up and he asks him to take them directly to Gary Seven's office. I don't know how he figured that he was there. That's the one thing I don't understand, how Kirk would even know that Gary Seven went.
Oh, he told him the transport. Oh, was that before or after?
I don't think he told him at all. That's the thing.
Well, Kirk gets back to the office, and then they try to fight him over.
And by the way, during this time, just before they show up, Roberta, Terry Garr's character.
Hits him on the head.
She hits him on the head with like a cigarette box. And then she takes his
sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, she thinks he's trying to steal a nuke and trying to blow people up and stuff like that. Spock tries to run the Beta 5 computer in his office. He doesn't really know how to work it that well. And finally, Kirk makes the decision to let Gary Seven work the computer.
Well, because she tries to shoot him, and Gary's like, no, he takes the sonic screwdriver away from her, and then he hands it to Kirk. So Kirk...
He says it was set to kill.
It was set to kill. So Kirk knows he can trust him since he just saved his life.
Well, he didn't know right away, because even Spock goes, what should I do, Spock? And he says, it's only your only human intuition can make this decision.
Only intuition can get us through the day.
His pure logic can't do it.
Spock would never say that.
That's a good point. Anyway, so Gary Seven detonates the rocket like 104 miles above the atmosphere, so it doesn't kill anybody. And
nuclear war is averted.
Yes. And basically, we have a little parting shot of, hey, we're going, and see you later. Good luck, Gary Seven. And the beam off the planet, and that's the last we see of Gary Seven, and somehow the Enterprise gets back into the future. Dave?
Just wow.
You've seen this episode before, haven't you?
I'm sure I've seen it when I was a kid.
Well, you haven't seen it since you were a kid.
I don't remember seeing this recently, except for the two times I watched it to prepare for this episode. Maybe I've seen it. I just blocked it out because it's just.
I blocked it out. I can't take it.
It doesn't feel like Star Trek at all.
No, it doesn't.
It's like another show, but with Star Trek characters happening to be there.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like, and right. it's this jarring. It's not as fun as Star Trek usually is.
Right.
It's just so weird. Like this is like I said at the beginning. This is animated series level of weird.
It's partly why I like it, but it is not a good episode. Anything else?
You told me that this was supposed to be to kick off a new show. Mm-hmm. It was like a backdoor pilot.
That's what they call it. Yeah.
And so I was like, why on a show that's looking at cancellation? Why would you put a backdoor pilot in it? Like, if you're scared people aren't seeing it, mm-hmm. like, I mean, why wouldn't you do this on a more popular show? And it just kind of blew me away. And after reading the Memory Alpha, Gene Roddenberry did it specifically because
he couldn't get a pilot made.
Specifically because Star Trek was looking like it was going to get canceled, and he wanted to have like
this next job.
Options.
Yeah, his next job. Yeah, and he thought if he gets this made and gets the right people interested, they would make that show,
make it into a show.
I mean, they did the same thing with Happy Days. Happy Days brought Mork for Mork with Robin Williams aboard,
mm-hmm.
and Mork for Mork was shot off from that, and that was wildly popular. So it was just really weird. So, but that was definitely a backdoor pilot, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's I think that's why this episode is so bizarre, because it was basically written to be a pilot for a different show.
Yeah,
which is the way it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I mean, like, if a show's facing cancellation, you'd think you'd want to tie it in with a show that's not facing cancellation, so it'll have better ratings and get in front of more eyes.
Right.
It's just really strange.
Well, yeah. So,
what are your takeaways on it just initially?
Well, first of all, it's like you said, it's barely a Star Trek episode. I mean, it's obviously you see the Enterprise, you have Kirk and Spock, but Kirk and Spock take a very far back seat through this
to Gary Seven and the computer.
Yeah,
it's like the computer was supposed to be Spock.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gary Seven's kind of like Bones and Kirk mixed in the one character.
And Terry Garr is sort of like the, you know, offbeat secretary, like
the comic relief sort of.
Yeah, a little bit, but so like Kirk and Spock are barely like they like the whole scene where they're like in the launch room and they're under guard. And like Kirk even says, I've never felt so helpless in my life.
Oh, like, are the captain's logs psychic? Because it's like, you think he's got to be doing it after the fact, but he's doing it in first person, like it's happening right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the stupid narration, but...
I'm like, is captain's logs mental? Is it like a chip in his head?
It's funny, is the captain's log idea is such a clever way to encapsulate the show, what's happened so far between commercial breaks.
Yeah, it's really smart, and it's also great for you know, the show's opening. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, this is what's happened since the last time you've seen this. It's fantastic.
No, it's a great narrative. But yeah, so that was goofy. But just Kirk being like, never felt so helpless. Like, when had fucking Kirk ever been like,
oh, I feel helpless.
I don't know what to do. And just standing there like,
it's unarmed GIs.
Just the fact that Kirk and Spock are sitting there and literally doing nothing, and like this nuclear warhead rocket is going to be launching in like minutes, and there's
no one's even watching them.
Yeah,
like their backs, like they're looking at their backs like almost the entire time, except for the couple minutes they're being questioned.
And why would you keep people who just intrude or like try to break onto the site? Why would you keep them in the launch area?
In the lunch room.
Yeah, well, like the mission control room.
Yeah, we just were here for the tour.
What? There's not a tour? There's not today? A tour.
We heard the tour was canceled, so we figure we make our own tour.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so, it's hard to watch if you're a Star Trek fan just looking for a Star Trek episode, because you're really getting a Star Trek light episode. It really isn't quite Star Trek.
It's not Star Trek at all.
The idea was by Gene Roddenberry.
Well, Gene Roddenberry had his hand heavy in this because he wanted this to be a pilot.
This is what he was working on, trying to, because I think he just figured that Star Trek was going away. And like you said, it was going to go away, except the letter campaign to keep Star Trek for another season definitely works. So. But still, it's very interesting. And a couple things about the episode, about going back in time. There were some things they talk about here that they...
This is fascinating. This is probably the best, or I don't know if it's the best part about this episode. It's really terrible. I think I know what you're getting ready to get into. Like a bunch of things that they predicted in the show like happened days to weeks later.
Right. And
from the air date.
And let's be clear, there's no possible way that anybody writing these things, because this happened like months and months before this was ever filmed and released, edited, released, would anybody know that this was going to happen?
So like days to weeks from when this aired, these things happen. Take it away.
So the coincidence that Spock says the same day assassination that the U.S. was launching the orbital nuclear warhead platform, Martin Luther King was assassinated, and he was assassinated, what does it say here? This episode was first aired on March 29th, 1968, and 6 days later, on April 4th, 1968, there was Martin Luther King was assassinated. So on the same day as the launch of the unmanned Apollo 6 Saturn rocket, and Saturn 6, amazingly enough, suffered severe mishap and went off course. So like the rocket that went off course, just like in the show, mm-hmm. did that, and also...
And the stock footage was also Apollo.
Yeah, and then Martin Luther King, because they mentioned assassination, happened on this day.
Like just day, 6 days later. That is insane. Was Gene Roddenberry the second coming of Nostradamus?
I don't know. But
because he was the one who was heavily involved in writing this episode. That is crazy that like it just happened that way.
Also, chronologically, the closest candidate Spock's other prediction of a government coup in Asia would be on July 17th, a military coup in Iraq brought Saddam Hussein to power on July 17th revolution. So yeah, like 4 months later.
I mean, that's not as amazing as like the Apollo going off course terribly by accident and,
right.
you know, an assassination of, you know, a huge figure in American history.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but it's still, like, it's interesting that all, like, kind of went together like that.
Yeah. So. That blew me away. That's probably the most interesting thing about this episode is that how it was written and then bad things happened, like, for real, yeah. around the exact same time it was coming out. I just wonder if people, like, freaked out in real life.
I don't know if they probably didn't make that connection right away. Maybe some people did, but they'd have to be pretty diehard Star Trek fans.
I guess, but
they're like writing down their notebooks. Ooh.
It's like, well, no, but I mean, like, just like, oh, last week's episode on Star Trek, they said someone got assassinated and Martin Luther King got assassinated.
Holy shit.
Like, you know, like, that doesn't seem like too big of a stretch for people to be like, whoa.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I guess it just didn't blow up because they were having to use, like, you know, fanzines and snail mail. It didn't, no Twitter for that to blow up on.
Yeah, that's another thing. Is they just took you probably weeks and months to get any kind of, like, responses to other fans. And stuff
that noticed it, maybe, or if it was noticed at all, who knows?
The other thing, obviously, is Gary Seven. I actually think Gary Seven's a pretty interesting character. I would have liked to see more Gary Seven. And I kind of like the idea that Gary Seven lives in the Star Trek universe. It's just weird.
From this other crazy planet. And in the Memory Alpha, there's like, I think, comics and short stories.
Yeah, so...
The short stories would be considered Memory Beta, since...
Right.
Since anything that's not on screen is not canon.
Right, so there has been... There's been a couple comics. One was written by one of my comic book heroes, John Byrne, did Assignment Earth, which is a Gary Seven comic. And also there's a novel, Assignment Eternity, which has the eugenic wars, the rise and fall of Khan Noonien Singh. And the latter novels, Gary Seven and Roberta Lincoln, go to stop Khan Noonien Singh, and they're basically ones to help him take him off the planet, but also make him live to see another day. So
that'd be interesting if that's what Nicholas Meyer is working on, like Khan thing.
That,
well, although I think the Khan thing he's working on, supposedly, if that's what he's working on, is supposed to be on set of Alpha 5. But mm-hmm. I'd love to see like a short on what it was like in the final days of the Eugenics Wars, like how Khan got away.
Oh, yeah, that would be fascinating. Yeah, just going to the comic book, IDW Publishing in 2008 had a 5-issue comic book series, Assignment Earth, by John Byrne.
Wow, that's pretty recent.
Yeah, and it John Byrne is one of my heroes growing up, but he's a big Star Trek fan. And so it includes the characters' lives of Gary Seven and Roberta Lincoln from 1968 to 1974, and their events prior to episodes Tomorrow Is Yesterday and before Assignment Earth. So
I just think it's fascinating that people are like continuing on with this Assignment Earth thing, even though it was such a weird...
It's weird, but it's kind of cool because, like, you got a glimpse of something, like, really, like, it let's face it, it wouldn't be a terrible show. Of course, how it's written and everything, that's a different story, but...
Like, as its own show, it could have been really interesting.
As a Star Trek episode, it's like, eh.
It's not what you're thinking about when you're wanting to watch Star Trek.
Right, right.
Like, this could have been a really neat show on its own, like a more sci-fi Mission Impossible.
Right. Well, and two, it would have been cool for me to see Kirk and Gary Seven kind of go at loggerheads more and more, because they just didn't seem to hardly, besides the transporter room and like the very final scene in the office, they barely...
It's more like cat and mouse. There's not much on screen with them at the same time.
Yeah, and they don't really interact too much, and it would have been cool to get like some dramatic interactions between everybody. So
yeah, because the guy who plays Gary, he's a good actor.
Yeah, and that so
really solid.
Robert Lansing was actually a good friend of Gene Roddenberry, and Gene Roddenberry wanted him to do something with Star Trek, but he was like, "Star Trek's kind of like a kid show," because he did like a lot of serious acting, like he did like Broadway and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and so he says, "I'm writing you a show with you in mind," and this was the Gary Seven thing. Gary, so, you know,
it just kind of felt like Get Smart to me, but without any laughs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. But it reminded me of like a little bit of Man from U.N.C.L.E. and stuff like that. Kind of have that spy thing. But, so Gene Roddenberry was friends with this guy, and Gary Lansing, Robert Lansing is super, his acting career is prolific. He's in a ton of films. He's been in a ton of, movies. He's been in You just look at his IMDb. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's so long. I mean, he died pretty recently. I think the last movie was in 2010.
Wow.
But yeah, but he was. Oh, it wasn't his movie. It was one of those cop shows like
NCIS or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember. It wasn't that, but it was very similar. But you get the idea. But so yeah, so he's a pretty talented guy. But Terry Garr, also one of my favorites. She was in one of my favorite movies ever, Young Frankenstein, where she plays the girl opposite of Gene Wilder.
Oh, like, yeah.
Yeah. You know, like a roll in the hay, roll in the hay. So wonderful. She's also the wife of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is okay. A fantastic movie. Oh my God, such a great movie about aliens. Well worth the watch. So yeah, Terry Garr is amazing. She's super funny, super just a good actress, period. I guess from this, I guess she had a terrible experience on this episode.
Oh yeah?
In fact, so I guess... Gene Roddenberry kept on trying to make her dress go up higher.
Shorter.
Yeah, shorter and shorter. And I guess the dress became poofier and poofier because it kept on hemming it up higher. And I guess she won't even talk about Star Trek anymore. She doesn't even want to talk about it because it was such a bad experience for her.
Wow.
I don't know what happened, you know, so who knows? Maybe she just was treated like shit.
Well, I mean, maybe Shatner was just a dick to her.
Maybe. Maybe Gary or Robert Lanz and Gary Seven was a dick to her. I don't know.
Who knows?
So that's all said. Okay. All that said, Gary Seven's awesome. He's Beta, Memory Beta is like, he's got tons of shit written about him. So, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff with Gary Seven. Here's what I want to throw out. And you know what I'm going to say. I think Gary Seven is a Time Lord. I think Gary Seven's a Time Lord from Gallifrey.
But they said he was human.
Yeah, maybe he messed things up a little bit. You know? I mean, these Time Lords are slippery people.
He does have a sonic screwdriver.
He's got a sonic screwdriver. He shows people his paperwork, just like Doctor Who does, and it's psychic paper, makes you believe whatever you want them to believe.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the paper, it's totally blank. I mean, I know the computer kind of like gave it to him,
yeah. But,
you know, very, very interesting. And I think the Beta 5 computer could very well be some form of a TARDIS.
Well, maybe it controls the transporter.
Well, the interesting thing about a TARDIS, especially the Doctor Who, because it's always that blue police box, is that apparently the settings, it's supposed to take the shape of any object in the area that lands in to kind of like make it
camouflage
it. But Doctor Who doesn't know how to change it. He doesn't know how to fix this. It's like it's broken.
None of his incarnations ever figured it out.
It's technically broken. Like he can't figure out how to change the camouflage, so it always stays the blue police box wherever he goes. So you know, because we don't see police boxes anymore. But back in like the 60s and 70s, police boxes were a thing.
Yeah.
And then they went away. I mean, even like in, you know, around here, there were things like police boxes. There were like small little things. Basically, a cop walking a beat or had a place they had to stand so he wouldn't get rained on and shit like that, you know. So, but anyways, the TARDIS was supposed to be able to change. It was super advanced computer. You know, or device, whatever you want to call it. So,
spaceship
time thing. So, but I was thinking to myself, like, well, the sonic screwdriver for Gary Seven kind of is like the big thing for Doctor Who. And I remember the original Doctor Who didn't have a sonic screwdriver. And I was looking back, well, when did the sonic screwdriver first show up? And it goes way back. This is where it gets really weird. So the sonic screwdriver came around the second Doctor, and it was the what was the TV show or what was the series called? It was called Fury from the Deep, which aired, now get this, March 16th, 1968. So literally like 2 weeks before, a week before Assignment Earth aired.
I wonder if someone had seen like production that works on one way or the other.
So this is the thing. So I looked up the writer of this episode for and who came up with the sonic screwdriver is a man named Victor Pemberton. He recently passed away. And I was looking like, did Gene Roddenberry go to England, or did Victor ever meet Gene Roddenberry, or did somebody who was, you know, like come up?
Oh, you did some digging.
I couldn't find a connection. Not on the internet. Maybe that something's written. If you know anything out there, internet podcast listeners, dear audience, let us know. But I really think that either Gene Roddenberry or Victor Pemberton, if they met, or some kind of people who are in production of either of these episodes, because the synchronicity between these two is really strange. Think about it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like, how long does a show take to produce? Write the film, write the screenplay, the teleplay, you know, get everybody ready for casting, do the actual filming, the editing, and then the production.
I imagine it used to take longer. I mean, like, if we take a look at what's happening with Star Trek Discovery right now, like, they're still filming episodes.
Yeah, but let's say it's probably 6 months.
But they started months ago.
Yeah, but let's say it takes about 6 months. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, go 6 months before. So we're talking 1967 sometime. And, you know, like, maybe in the fall of 1967, this Doctor Who version, the second Doctor in 1967, was the Fury from the Deep episodes that came out, and he introduced the sonic screwdriver.
So they're writing the episodes.
Do these people know each other? Are they writing to each other? Like, I really, if anybody has any clues of, like, does anybody from the Star Trek original series production writing people
have any ties to
the Doctor Who at that time? Because it is strangely, the synchronicity is very strange.
I'm sure they look very different, but they do very similar things.
You know, they don't look. The funny thing is they're not totally different. I mean, the only thing is that you wouldn't kill anybody with a sonic screwdriver. I don't know. Maybe you could kill somebody with a sonic screwdriver. I never really thought about it.
And Doctor Who?
Doctor Who never kills people.
Well, Gary Seven says we don't kill people either because the alien race were so advanced, we don't need to kill people.
Right.
But somehow it's not a kill setting. Maybe he just said that to make Kirk reason.
Believe him or something. Yeah. Like that. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. And like you said, Gary Seven was supposed to be human. So, and obviously, if you're Gallifrey, a Time Lord, you're not human. And it's been established in the TV show that they're not any bit human. But of course, it's going far back in history in 1967, 68. So I'm not sure anybody's going to be like, you know, like, I don't know if they mapped out what a Time Lord's biology is.
I mean, back then, who knows?
I've seen a couple of the first Doctor. I've barely seen anything of the second Doctor. My big time watching Doctor Who originally was Tom Baker, the guy with a very long scarf and the hat. That was my Doctor Who growing up. And then mm-hmm. I got into the Doctor Who's later iterations. But, yeah, so I don't know all the earlier ones as well. I have seen them, but I haven't watched enough to know, you know.
Sure.
And I was pretty young during that time, too. So it's like I wasn't really – like Netflix goes back, but they're kind of spotty. They don't put all of them up there. Maybe they've changed recently. I haven't seen it in a while. So I know you haven't watched Doctor Who that much, so –
yeah, I've seen a couple of David Tennant episodes, and I've seen a couple of the episodes of the guy before David Tennant. I did not like him.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom Esch, or
he just seems like he's like generic bad guy in lots of things. So like having him like play a protagonist just didn't work for me.
Yeah, but he has the one wonderful episode, The Doctor Can Dance, or Doctor Does Dance, or something like that. And it's a two parter that takes place during the
I didn't get that far.
World War II and the bombing of England, the Blitz,
Blitzkrieg,
not Blitz. No. I can't remember. But anyways. It's a wonderful two-parter. It is really worth watching. It's like It's terrifying. It's wonderful. It's everything. So it's a very good two-parter if you ever get a chance to see it. Whatever. So anyways, Doctor Who, I just wonder if there's some connection.
Some behind-the-scenes connection.
I can't believe that these two things come up and there has to be a connection.
Weeks apart.
Maybe weeks apart. Even just letters written from Victor Pemberton to somebody in Gene Roddenberry's writing team or something like that. So I don't know.
Or just maybe great minds think alike, you know? Just they both came up.
A sonic screwdriver like that? I mean, it's sort of a magic wand kind of thing, but...
Sure.
I mean, it's Gary Seven does have
a technological magic wand.
Gary Seven does sort of have like that magician kind of thing. He's got the black cat and... You know,
yeah.
And he's got the, you know, wand. And
like, very, like, witch, like, teenage witch type thing. Like, they get the cat and the wand, and it's sort of, like...
But, I mean, I could see a Doctor Who character, like Gary Seven, with a cat that changes into a human once in a while, and the Doctor always, a companion, has a girl that was with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this could very well be, you know, like, a Doctor Who kind of scenario.
Yeah, it does, but maybe more like spy and it's like weird sci-fi fantasy mashup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It definitely is. That part is cool to me. So anyway, so that's really fascinating. If anybody knows any information or even could, like, you know, email us or tweet me or any of us.
Or on the Facebook group.
On the Facebook group, if you know anything. I mean, definitely let us know if you have, like, even like a thread of, like, maybe this is something, or I read something here, maybe, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Doctor Who, but that's super fascinating that you did the research and that these two things are so close together and seem so similar. Like, it seems that there's got to be a connection.
I mean, you're talking, like, I think a difference of, like, 10 or 11 days or so, or something like that. Was it March 29th, Simon Earth came out, and this was...
Yeah.
Like March 16th or something like that. Yeah, so it's just crazy. It's just crazy that this came out.
That is super fascinating.
I don't know. Like I said, synchronicity. I don't know how those two both evolve in one time.
Yeah, so. And especially since Simon Earth is such an offshoot, weird, random episode.
But just remember, I mean, Doctor Who at the time was not a thing, really. BBC was producing it. It was a low-budget show. I mean, it had a cult following, but it wasn't huge.
Yeah.
It wasn't big yet. I mean, it only got... Doctor Who only really got big until, like in the 2000s.
The pre Tenet era is when it got big. And then Tenet made it huge.
Tenet really blew
Tenet
it up.
Tenet made Doctor Who, I think.
He did make Doctor Who, and then you had the Matt Smith made it also pretty cool. But, you know, like, the guys before that, I mean... It was all low budget, and I loved watching Doctor Who as a kid. It was sci-fi. It was really whacked out, like super weird. The sets were terrible. The costumes were just as bad, but it was just wonderful. It was so fun, and everyone took themselves so seriously because they're all British actors. In fact, a lot of the characters and villains and stuff like that were actually some of them were cast. You'll see them in the Star Wars movies. In the original trilogies.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of them because they're all British actors. They had a role in one of these, you know, a small role in Doctor Who. And
that's neat. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a ton of them.
But I knew there's a ton of British actors in Star Wars. I just didn't know they had crossovers with Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think you can look them up. It's pretty funny to see all the British actors that, like, you know, were, like, choked to death by Darth Vader and, you know, and that were in Doctor Who. But anyways, if you know anything, look up Victor Pemberton and what he did. He wrote a lot. He was a British sci-fi writer. So,
it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Very cool stuff. Anything else about this episode?
Just a weird episode. I do enjoy it. It's just not really a Star Trek episode.
No, it's not. And I just want to know how that audition went with the cat girl. Like, it's such a weird throwaway thing.
I think you're going to see more of that. That's what they're alluding to. You're going to see more of the sultry cat lady.
Yeah.
Meow, 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 meow.
meow, 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 meow.
Yeah.
Meow, 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 meow.
She just eats kitty litter.
I mean, kitty. She eats the litter.
She eats the litter.
She shits in
no!
the food. She shits in the food.
It's opposite. Isis, it's opposite.
Oh, that's funny.
I would say watch it. Some people really hate this episode. I don't hate it. It's not great. But, you know, it's a fun episode to watch and to think about. And when you watch it, think of Gary Seven as a Time Lord. And it's going to be more whimsical than weird to you. You're going to be like, wow, this is freaking crazy. He could be a Time Lord.
I guess if I was more into Doctor Who, maybe that would help save the episode for me. I really don't like it.
Wow. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, like, I'm glad I saw it because, like, I didn't even realize this was a thing. Because, like I said,
it's so strange hearing that from you.
I saw it when I was a kid.
Because most episodes you've seen like 16 times.
Oh, yeah. Most of them I have.
Yeah.
But TOS isn't my strongest suit. Like, you know, my dad, you know, was a lifetime, you know, he watched it when it came on. And, like, he had VHS tapes and stuff recorded off television and whatnot. So we watched Star Trek all the time. So I'm sure I've seen this episode probably dozens of times as a kid, but, like,
you didn't really pay attention to it.
No.
Or it was just like it was on the TV and you were playing with Legos or something.
Something. Yeah. And I feel like I was watching it for the first time when you had me watch this a couple weeks ago.
Well, at least I gave you a different way of thinking.
I was like, wow, that's...
This is fucked up.
It's like animated series before it was a thing. That's what I keep equating it to.
And you know I love animated series.
Yeah, I know. I mean, so, some of the stories are really great on animated series, but some of them are so whacked out.
Oh,
it's just
I agree.
Like,
that's the thing is, I like it. It's a mixed bag. You could get complete dog shit, or you could get some really fun. So,
Agmar and Me
is awesome. Go back and listen to Agmar and Me, whatever that it was, episode 20 something.
Yeah, it was an early episode. Yeah. That was fun.
I'd love to.
Speaking of going back and listening to the old episodes, thank you everyone who listens to the show regularly, and thank you for everyone who listened to this last episode that we just did with Jen, the Klingon Pop Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the episode Once More Into the Breach. I don't know if, like, the Klingon Pop Warrior turned some people off who normally listen to the show, but this was a really fascinating guest we had. If you haven't listened to it, please check it out. It was super fascinating. I know it's 2 hours long. It's really long, but it's such a – like, I listen to the show, you know, I edit the show, but then I listen to the show just to listen to it, and I feel like this is one of our best episodes in a while with Jen. And she does such amazing work with her Klingon singing.
Oh, her singing is great, and her Klingon diction, which I have no authority on, sounds amazing. So
yeah, and the songs are fun. Chop is hilarious,
and she's a fun guest.
She was an extremely fun guest, and we talked about Once More Into the Breach. I don't know if you read the entire title of the episode. Once More Into the Breach is such a fantastic Deep Space Nine Klingon episode.
Yeah, it's a good episode.
And we deep dive into that. And we all had a really fantastic time. I just saw our numbers were a little bit low on that episode. I wasn't sure what was going on.
What did we do?
Did we offend you? Was the title too long? Or did you, like, just fade out because it said Klingon Pop Warrior at the beginning? Like, just, like, if you haven't heard it, please go back and listen to that episode. She was an amazing guest. She does amazing work.
Yeah.
She's doing an Extra Life campaign, which is where you get donations and you choose what charity you're going to have it go to. She's doing it to like a children's hospital.
Yes.
And she's got a goal where if she makes $800 before, if she makes that goal, at least the day before the live stream is supposed to be, it's a 24 hour live stream. She's going to stay up for 24 hours and play video games for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
And if she gets the 800 goal before the day of the stream, she's going to do a concert. It's sometime during the stream. She'll sing the songs. Her guitar player is going to come on and play the music.
It's gonna be cool.
And she's going to do a live concert.
So
for people who can't go see her in person, you can watch like a live. And she'll probably sing, I don't know how many songs, but she's going to do a mini concert in the middle of the stream, which sounds fantastic.
Yeah, we were listening to her stuff just before we were setting up here. So.
Oh, yeah. I bought both of her EPs after we spoke with her, and I can't stop listening to them. It is so fascinating and so fantastic to listen to.
She's got a great voice.
Her voice is absolutely beautiful, and she pronounces Klingon super well. And like she said on the episode, she sometimes adds some extra Ashtach sounds to some words, especially on Over the Rainbow.
Yeah.
But it is so fantastic. It's a beautiful voice. Like, I can't recommend her EPs. They're worth every penny. It is beautiful.
You said you can't.
I can't recommend it enough.
Enough.
I can't recommend it enough. It is amazing.
Yeah.
Check it out. Check out our Extra Life campaign. She actually linked it in the Facebook group.
Yeah,
for sure. And I've relinked it since because she's doing the giveaway. She's at the Star Trek Con in Chicago, and I think she's doing a giveaway of her signed picture of Kalar.
Yeah, right. I saw that. That's awesome.
So that's an extra incentive to donate. She's doing some different kind of giveaway. So watch her social media, our Klingon Pop Warrior. If she doesn't share stuff to the group, I'll try to share it when I see it.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
Check her out. She does amazing work, and the Extra Life's for a really good cause.
Yeah. She was a great guest. I really enjoyed talking to her.
And if you didn't hear it yet, go listen to it. It was so much fun talking to her. She is such an energetic and fun person to talk to.
I agree.
Our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes. The rest of our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show, you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. On Twitter, the show is at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I am David_J_Duncan on Twitter.
I'm Blackbird2004.
Guy shows up as GS Davis Art on Twitter. And if you like pictures of booze and our cover art, you can check out that on our my Instagram, which is also at David_J_Duncan. Mm-hmm.
Hey, and if you have a moment, we'd love if you come and rate and review us. Give us 5 stars preferably, and give us a nice review. That helps us get seen more in the algorithms of iTunes and other podcast apps, whatever you want to call them. And also, if you can come over to our site or go to Patreon, we do have a site where you can throw a little money our way to keep our podcast going. $1 a month. If you have more, that'd be great. But just a little bit to help us definitely helps us to keep the cost of running this podcast. The podcast free, of course, free for all. But if you have a little money, then you enjoy it listening to us. We greatly appreciate
it. It's free for all except for us. Yes. We put a lot of time into it, editing, recording, and then there's also the financial things of the website. It's a yearly fee and then a monthly fee for the web hosting. So you guys can download it whenever you want.
Right. Also, if you know anybody who likes Star Trek, who likes sci-fi, likes silly humor, definitely send them our way.
Who likes Gary Seven?
Gary Seven. If you know somebody who might have a clue what's going on between Doctor Who and Gary Seven, let them know. Have them listen to this episode. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to spread this podcast. If you know somebody who like any of those things or who just likes podcasts or looking for different content, definitely throw our name out there.
We're looking for something different because I do believe we are something different. Oh, at the very least.
We are so different. for sure. So, yeah, definitely word of mouth is wonderful if you can recommend us to anybody. But, hey, that we have you as a listener is a wonderful thing. We definitely appreciate all our listeners. We also have a great community coming together over there at a Facebook.
Facebook.com/group/Synthaholics.
Yep. Definitely check us out. We have a lot of people chiming in, talking about all sorts of things, especially Discovery nowadays. But we talk about other stuff that, people are all chiming in and talking about whatever Star Trek related and sci-fi and It's great.
There's another group. I think it was the Anything Star Trek memes group. Someone posted a picture of like a Photoshop, like Kirk and Spock shirtless with like kind of hugging each other from like behind. And I posted on there. I was like, yeah, me and my podcast co-host, we're talking about doing slash fiction if people are interested. And we just haven't gotten people interested. And one person responded to my message and was like, I'd like to express my interest. So right now we have one person. I asked her to join the group, but I don't know if she has yet at the time of the recording. But
come on,
I think that's interesting. I asked her to invite to the group. Maybe she could stir up interest.
Well, people are writing. People are writing this. There must be a demand somewhere. How about slash fiction with Gary Seven and Cat and Kirk and Spock? I don't know. So.
That'd be funny.
Get on it, internet.
Yeah, if you want us to do that, let us know. And we do. We even have a volunteer for a female voice. If the slash fiction does,
never going to happen. Anyways,
we should do it as a joke at the very least.
Someday we'll do it. Yeah, for sure.
But if you want to hear a lot of it, let us know.
Dave's really bent on this.
I just think it's funny.
It's hilarious. It's gonna be great.
Especially like doing it in a really dramatized, like super serious.
Super serial, dude.
Super serial, like Mando Pig. Anyway, well, thank you again all for listening. We really appreciate each and every one of you. We love you. Interact with us. We love interaction. So if you're not already on the Facebook group, feel free to join the Facebook group.
Or just send us an email at synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Yeah, because we'll read the emails on the air and we'll respond to them. If you don't want to type, you can record a message and email it to us that way too, and we can play it right here live on the air and respond to it.
Absolutely. It'd be wonderful.
All right. Well, have a great evening, morning, afternoon, car ride, whichever, wherever you listen to us. Have a great one. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
I forgot to say that Klingon did not come out this week on Duolingo.
Oh, no.
There's an issue with the apostrophe, because the apostrophe is an important letter for Klingon. It's the abrupt stop, in the kapla. That's how the A stops off. It's not kapla.
Mm-hmm.
It's kapla.
Mm-hmm.
So it wants to make sure the spelling is correct. Like it does, I think maybe it ignores apostrophes, like the Duolingo by default.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people just forget to write them or whatever. But it's really important in Klingon. So they're wanting to try to make sure that's right before it goes into beta for everyone to try.
Well, being someone who has apostrophe in his name, I do know that most forums do not recognize apostrophes. They're just like, what's apostrophe? O'Brien? No.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, and so they're trying to fix that issue with Duolingo.
So I have to type it in O'Brien.
O'Brien.
Except O'Brien.
Oh yeah, because you type it in, like what's this?
Yeah,
you can't
know
put that. You can't
doesn't
put
know
that
what apostrophe is. Like, I don't know what that is. Punctuation.
Yeah, it's interesting because. Just reading the Klingon dictionary, and when people explain like how Klingon words are said in videos I've watched, you know, they say it's a letter in English, but we just don't ever acknowledge it as a letter because, like, you know, it's like the uh-oh, like the that quick cutoff, like and the uh-oh.
Yeah. It's a hard silence.
Yeah, it's a hard silence, and it's not. It's not written, but I mean, that's how those words are said.
But it's like music, too, because music has like a rest and, you know, that you just don't, you stop playing. You stop. And they even have, I think for some of them, like guitars and stuff like that, you mute your strings.
Yeah.
So you know, you're not making any sound. So you don't even let it ring out.
Oh, yeah. You just stop it. But yeah,
you know, so.
So it's just interesting. That's how the language works.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate that the program is giving them issues. Also, Klingon has capital. It doesn't acknowledge capitals for like the beginning of sentences because
of course not.
Well, because Klingons and Klingon little Q and capital Q are two different letters.
Gotcha.
So I mean, the capitals indicate a totally different letter.
So Klingons are so aggressive; they're actually aggressively taking over the meanings of our English language. They're literally taking over our Qs.
Qs. Qs are two different letters in Klingon. Little Q, big Q.
Those Klingon bastards. Killed my son.
I've never forgiven them.
For the death of my son.
And the way they punctuate their sentences.
Klingon bastards.